From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. On this Thursday, September 15th, 2016, we are honored you've allowed Current Sports to be a part of your weekday afternoon yet again. On today's show, we've got a jam-packed hour in store for all of you out there. On today's Current Sports, we will chat about a new addition for Tom Izzo and the Michigan State men's basketball team. A pretty big name, folks. We'll get to that. Also, the Detroit Tigers pull out a game with a ton of runs scored last night against the Minnesota Twins. We will have a full recap of that one. Also, in the middle of the hour, we will continue the conversation that we started on the back end of yesterday's show, centered on hazing in sports. Of course, Outside the Lines, ESPN's stout reporting program, had an hour-long special earlier this week that centered on hazing in the world of sports and a few stories that really turned my stomach upside down. So we will chat about this, I guess you can say, growing phenomenon. And on the back end of the show, we'll have Throwback Thursday for you, as well as, of course, talk about the big game that will take place this Saturday for the Michigan State football team on the road against the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. You want to be a part of the show? Well, you know how. You know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners. All right, we start with a big addition for the Michigan State men's basketball team. Tom Izzo has added another top prospect to his upcoming arsenal with the 2017 recruit of Jaren Jackson Jr., a five-star big man from LaPorte, Indiana, who posted on Twitter this morning that he would continue his basketball career here at Michigan State University. Now, Jackson chose MSU over Purdue, Notre Dame, Maryland, and Georgetown. Jackson's father, Jaren Sr., played for Georgetown from 1985 to 89 and also played for nine different NBA teams during parts of 12 seasons. Jackson is ranked as the number 15 recruit by Rivals.com, 26 by ESPN, and 27th by 247sports.com and scout.com. All right, the MSU men's soccer team improved to 4-1 on the year with a 1-0 victory after Oakland gave up an own goal during the 52nd minute. Junior midfielder Jimmy Fiskus, his header, went off the post, but the ball crossed the line when an Oakland defender tried to clear it. Redshirt sophomore goalkeeper Jimmy Haig, he earned his second consecutive shutout while tallying up four saves. Now, the Spartans are back in action on Sunday when they host in-state rival Michigan in the battle for the Big Bear Trophy. Kickoff is at 12 noon on the Big Ten Network for that one. Not only did Oklahoma State lose big this weekend, but so did former OK State wide receiver and now Dallas Cowboys wide receiver Dez Bryant. It seems as if Bryant and teammate Kevon Frazier, who was drafted by the Dallas Cowboys from Central Michigan this year, they made a bet on the game. Frazier tweeted a video yesterday of him happily recording Bryant paying up with push-ups. Gotta love that, right? All right, the Detroit Tigers topped the Minnesota Twins 9-6 last night. Anibal Sanchez started strong, throwing a shutout through his first three innings, but that momentum came to a screeching halt in the fourth when he gave up five runs. After giving up his sixth earned run in the top of the fifth inning, his night was kaput, done, finito. The bullpen combination of Alex Wilson, Shane Green, Bruce Rondon, and Francisco Rodriguez went six innings and gave up no runs on one hit, three strikeouts, no walks. Miggy, Miguel Cabrera, broke the 6-6 tie in the bottom of the eighth with a deep line drive home run to left center field. That would be the game-winning run. Ian Kinsler finished the game with four hits for his 18th time in his career and was just a home run away from hitting for the cycle. Kinsler and the Tigers will finish their series versus the Twins today at 7:10 p.m. in exactly 5 minutes. We'll give you an update throughout the hour on that one. All right, Tigers all-star first baseman, again, Miguel Cabrera, had an encouraging message also to the fans of Detroit while his team is in the midst of fighting for a playoff spot. Quote, "You play for this. You've got a chance to make the playoffs. We hope we can finish strong and have a chance to play in the playoffs. This is fun." The veteran also talked about some of the negativity seen on social media throughout the season, saying, quote, "I've been here a lot of years. I've been through it. But we got a lot of new guys here. Don't worry about that stuff. They think about it and read stuff, but we need to stay positive and go out there and play." End quote. His final message was simple. Stay positive, Detroit. The Tigers are one game behind Toronto for the second wild card spot and six behind Cleveland in the American League Central. On Wednesday, the Chicago Cubs sent former Central Michigan pitcher and Homer High graduate Josh Koelminter to the Atlanta Braves in a trade for cash. The 30-year-old pitcher could start as soon as Saturday for the Atlanta Braves. Koelminter began the 2016 year on the DL with Arizona. After coming back from injury, he joined the Diamondbacks bullpen and posted a 4.84 ERA in 15 relief appearances. In August, he signed a minor league deal with the Chi and appeared in four starts with the Cubs' AAA affiliate. Koelminter had 9 strikeouts and 8 walks in 16 innings of work, while allowing 2 runs or fewer in each start. Washington State President Kirk Schultz and Athletic Director Bill Moose are expected to meet with Pullman Police Chief Gary Jenkins today to discuss 3 separate incidents involving football players. Washington State Head Coach Mike Leach said the police are treating his players unfairly. Leach accused the police of purposely targeting his players. Logan Tago was arrested on allegedly robbing and assaulting robbery and assault charges back in June. Now, in July, multiple football players were involved in a fight at a house party, and Shalom Luani was arrested on alleged assault charges in August. Washington State has lost their first 2 games this year by a combined 6 points. They are back in action Saturday at home against Idaho at 2 p.m. And last but not least, love this story. L.A. Dodgers right fielder Yasiel Puig met with L.A. Dodgers fan Alyssa Gerharder. Puig caught a fly ball for the last out to beat the Yankees 8-2 at Yankee Stadium in New York on Monday. Puig threw the ball into the stands where it hit Gerharder in the face and knocked out her front tooth. On Wednesday, Gerharder was back at Yankee Stadium where she got to meet Puig. She received a signed ball by Puig, and they also took pictures and posted them on social media where the hashtag, quote, "Puig my tooth," was trending on Twitter. The Dodgers are in action again tonight against the Arizona Diamondbacks at 9:40 p.m. Love that story. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Call in to be a part of today's show, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's start the show.
4, 3, 2, 1. Culture at that school with Coach Izzo and having all the players buy into his system and what they do on and off the court. Also, the diversity of the school is also very, very important. It's a pretty diverse school. I think also the way it was set up for me to be successful, I could come in and play a specific role, which would be more of like a stretch four, and that's kind of what they need on their team right now. They have great players at all positions, but I think I can just come in and make the team better and help them win any way I can. I'm a good teammate. I think I get everybody involved, whether it's talking to them, whether it's passing them the ball, whether it's picking somebody up. I think I'm good at that. You know how they go, the conversations, they had the whole staff there, you know, we really want you at Michigan State, blah, blah, blah. I knew I was going to tell them, but they didn't know I was going to say. They were pretty shocked. He basically was talking about what I really didn't even hear him. I was kind of just zoning out, and I told him, he was just so excited. Kind of cried a little bit, and I was like, dang, coach, I just saw you in the Hall of Fame. You going to cry like that? And it was just really funny to see someone of his caliber like show actual emotion.
And that is how we start this afternoon's Current Sports. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show, ladies and gents, boys and girls. I am your host, Al Martin. It is Thursday. You are just a day away. That's right. You can do it. You can do it. I can't believe it's already Thursday, though. I mean, time flies when you're having fun. As I always say, we always have fun here on WKAR's Current Sports. Again, our phone lines are open. They will stay open as they customarily do each and every afternoon here on our airwaves. If you want to be a part of today's show, pick up that phone and dial 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our social media pages and weigh in at facebook.com/currentsports, or even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR_sports. Boy, oh boy, I know Tom Izzo, the head men's basketball coach here at Michigan State University, has to be on cloud 50 right now. Not cloud 9. Yeah, cloud 50. I mean, he just got inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame last week, right? And now he lands yet another big-time recruit in five-star. Yes, not one, not two, not three, not four, but five. Yes, a five-star big man in Jaren Jackson Jr. Wow, pretty cool stuff, right? And, you know, I watched Jaren's highlight reel this morning, and I was absolutely floored about just when evaluating the talent that is Jaren Jackson Jr. I mean, he's 6'10", 225 pounds, and he's got long arms. He's real lengthy. He's got great instincts inside the post, and he can also take you inside and outside. He's a pretty good shooter as well. I mean, an absolutely fabulous recruit, and, you know, this comes in the midst of a pretty good recruiting period for Izzo, seeing as though his 2016 recruiting class has been dubbed as the most talented that he's ever had in his 20 years as the head coach here at Michigan State. And that class, of course, you know, just to refresh everyone's memory, it includes a pair of five-star players ranked among the top 25 in the country in forward Miles Bridges, who we had the privilege of seeing in the Moneyball Summer League Pro-Am out in Diamonddale, Michigan at AIM High Sports Complex. And Miles Bridges is going to be a stud, folks. So athletic. I think Miles has the opportunity to become the most athletic player to ever play here at Michigan State University. He's that good, folks. And also, can't forget about guard Josh Langford. And how about, you know, that class also includes a pair of four-star recruits in point guard Cassius Winston and forward Nick Ward, who we also saw in the Money League Pro Ball Summer League Pro-Am, which is fun to watch. Now, all four are ranked among the top 40 players in the country. Izzo agreed. He said, you know, the class is large size with four recruits, and the overall talent level, without a doubt, makes it the best out of his entire tenure. And, you know, again, going back to Bridges, a Flint native, he was ranked the number 12 overall player in the country. And, you know, he comes in to Michigan State's program as the highest rated recruit since Shannon Brown back in 2003. So now for, of course, you know, next year's recruiting class, 2017, you get Jaren Jackson Jr., a five-star to kick off things there. Pretty cool stuff. And you heard Jaren in that snippet there talk about when he told the news to head coach Tom Izzo, you know, sitting down with him and you know, he broke the news to Tom and he was so ecstatic. And this is a guy, you know, for those that watched Tom Izzo's Hall of Fame induction speech this past weekend, Tom went to the podium, and I thought for sure, because Tom is a, you know, the hard exterior that Tom shows during basketball games and that uber competitiveness that you always see, him giving it to the referees or giving it to his players. I mean, Tom, that's Tom in competition mode. That's Tom in game mode. But away from the basketball court, I mean, Tom is a big old teddy bear, folks. He really is. He's mushy. And I really thought we would see Tom Izzo shed a tear or two or three during his Hall of Fame induction speech. But, you know, he held it together pretty well. Not one tear came down. It was just a proud moment for him, and he held it together as he went through his entire speech. But we've seen Tom break down and cry, especially when it comes to positive things concerning his players, okay? And Jaren Jackson Jr. committing, and you heard what Jaren had to say to Detroit Free Press, Michigan State sports writer Chris Solari. And when he sat down with Tom and he broke the news to him, Tom cried a bit. You know, he cried a bit. That speaks volumes to the type of guy that Tom Izzo is. He cares about his players. He cares about about Michigan State, you know, and where the program is headed. So much so, and that passion, that deep passion reigns so true, so much so that he gets emotional from time to time. But no doubt about it, this is a huge recruit for Izzo. Anytime you talk about, and I don't get caught up in the whole, oh my gosh, is he a three-star? Is he a two-star? Is he a four-star? Is he a five-star? I don't get caught up in that. But I will say this, anytime you are a five-star recruit in high school, it speaks volumes to the type of talent that you are. I must say that. But how many times have we seen, you know, guys who are two-star and three-star recruits end up being just absolute studs in the college ranks, and not even just in basketball, but football as well. You know, we've seen it countless times. So I'm looking forward to seeing Jaren out there on the court. This is a big get for Tom. And again, Jackson, number 15 in the nation by Rivals.com, 26th by ESPN, 27th by both 247sports.com and Scout.com. He actually transferred to private La Lumiere over the summer from Park Tudor in Indianapolis, excuse me. And he averaged, 16.1 points, 7.8 rebounds, and a little over 4 blocks a game as a junior, and helped Park Tudor to the Indiana 3A semis last year after winning back-to-back state titles in 2014 and 15. Pretty impressive stuff. And then you talk about the lineage, right? Well, his pops played for the great John Thompson in the 80s. And his pops also played with 9 different NBA teams. So a big get for Tom. And again, you know, don't want to put the cart before the horse here. This is certainly a big get, but it all has to gel on the basketball court. And that's why I say about this upcoming year for Tom Izzo, even though Tom has, in 2016, his best recruiting class ever, by far, folks. You know, how well and how quickly can this team gel? That's the big question for me. You know, and these are a lot of young pups stepping into some pretty big roles. And I think you'll see a lot of these young pups become starters. You know, especially, you know, a guy like Miles Bridges. I think Josh Langford would also crack that starting lineup. I mean, but how quickly can they gel? And how will they deal with being in that sort of spotlight? You know, it's a different ball game going from high school to college. But I always say in basketball, you know, basketball more so than any other sport, I think talent, you know, if you're talented on the basketball court, it doesn't matter. You know, if you're good, you're good. Those nerves are eventually going to settle, and you're going to settle into your game. So and especially watching Bridges over this past summer, I mean, it was ridiculous going to Diamonddale, Michigan, and going to Aim High and watching Miles out there on the court. Because first off, if you got there, you know, 10 minutes before tip-off, you weren't getting a close parking spot. I mean, he was must-see TV, folks. You know, I remember one time, you know, the game is at 7. I remember Miles played a late game. And I got there about, I got there about 20 minutes before tip-off. And people were pulling up out of nowhere. I mean, people parking on the grass. And I parked, like, on the other side of the building. Like, I had to walk about 7 minutes just to get to the front door. And, you know, everybody's packed in the gym. It was standing room only. If you didn't get a seat, you definitely were standing up trying to get a glimpse of Bridges on the basketball court. And the kid dealt with the pressure. I mean, he's so even keel. His personality is so even keel. He deals with the pressure like it's easy. But he went out there and had a, you know, just a great all-around summer with the Moneyball Summer League. And again, it's just a summer league. The competition's going to ramp up times 20. He's not really playing any, you know, crazy deep, you know, playing against any crazy defense out there. But at the same time, you see the talent that Miles Bridges is. And the ceiling is very high for this young man. So we'll see, though. You know, and but you know, kind of capitalizing this entire conversation, I mean, the fact that Tom is finally starting to get these big-time recruits on a regular basis, I mean, what is that saying about where the Michigan State basketball program is headed? Because historically, you know, Tom, you know, may get a four-star, you know, and a solid three-star just on the edge of being a four-star. Rarely do we see Tom Izzo haul in these five-star recruits. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with how good of a coach Izzo is and the history that he has established here for the Michigan State men's basketball program. And you better believe that the fact that he is a basketball Hall of Famer, when he goes into a young recruit's living room and tries to woo that young recruit to come to his basketball program, the fact that Izzo is now a member of the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame, that holds a ton of weight in the young minds of those potential recruits. And I must say this as well. I mean, hey, Izzo went in with a class that has a lot of street cred. I mean, Allen Iverson, Shaquille O'Neal. How about Cheryl Swoops? I mean, that's a pretty stout class. So I want to know what your thoughts are about the latest news of Jaren Jackson Jr. recruiting, you know, and committing, I should say, to the Michigan State men's basketball program. And how good do you think this program will be next year? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I want to transition now to talk a little bit about the Detroit Tigers. You know, yesterday was a pretty cool day for me because after I got off the airwaves, I got to link up with my television producer of Current Sports TV, Mr. Tim Elkins, and we went out, and I actually got to play golf for the first time in like 3 weeks with Tim's father, Keith, and we had a great time, and we're out there playing, and you know, after we get done playing around, we sit back and we all tune into the Tigers game. And to start that game, you know, we're sitting there watching the Tigers just absolutely struggle against the lowly Minnesota Twins. And I'm sitting there saying to myself, and we're all debating back and forth whether or not the Detroit Tigers will, you know, etch a playoff spot, and you know, whether or not Brad Ausmus will be back as the Tigers manager next season. Because I believe that, and I've gone on the record to say this multiple times, even if the Tigers do get a wild card spot, and, you know, heck, let's even say they win that wild card game and move on to an actual series in the MLB playoffs. If the Tigers don't get to the World Series, Brad Ausmus is gone. I don't foresee a scenario in which Brad Ausmus keeps his job next year. That's just my opinion. Now, do I agree with that? I don't know, you know, because it's a catch-22 here. I've said multiple times that you cannot put this all on the shoulders of Brad Ausmus, even though the man has made many questionable decisions throughout his tenure as the Detroit Tigers manager. But at the same time, you know, you have to hold players accountable. And the Tigers players have simply just not shown up. And it's been a catch-22 all year. Either the Tigers have great run support and poor starting pitching, or the exact opposite has happened, where the starting pitching has been up to par, but the run support just simply has not been there. Well, I'll tell you what, last night, starting pitching was absolutely horrible. Anibal Sanchez was horrible to start that game. I mean, it was tough to watch Sanchi just go out there and just really just, you know, kind of take it inning by inning. And you saw the frustration on his face. And I just couldn't believe, you know, that Sanchi was out there. I couldn't believe how far he went into that game until Brad said, all right, we got to make a change here. But with that being said, I mean, poor starting pitching, great run support. You know, usually the Tigers. But the report was so good. And how about Miguel Cabrera coming up clutch when his team needed him most? And I can bring up other names. You know, how about Cameron Maben and Ian Kinsler hitting back-to-back doubles in that game in the first inning to build it that early lead? I mean, and Cameron Maben has been my Tiger all year. I absolutely love Cameron Maben. I love his person, love his work ethic. And I love his overall game. I mean, he's a fantastic player. He has been one of the few shining lights for this Detroit Tigers team throughout this year. But I always say, around this time of the year, again, when you're knocking on the door of October and the playoffs are right there, you got to start playing your best baseball. And you have to take care of the teams that you are supposed to handle. And you struggle against the Minnesota Twins? That can't happen. That can't happen, folks. And to give you a quick update, again, the finale of that series against the Twins is happening right now, 1:10 p.m., is the first pitch. Well, was the first pitch, I should say. And you have pitchers Mike Pelfrey and Max Kepler going at it right now. It's in the top of the second. No score as of yet. But going back to Miguel Cabrera, and I sort of alluded to it in our quick hit headliners, Miguel Cabrera had an interesting moment with the press, with the media yesterday. And I'm reading from an article in the Detroit Free Press written by Anthony Fennick of the Freep, and Anthony goes on to describe what took place after the 9-6 wins over the Twins yesterday in the clubhouse. And Miggy, you know, he went on to tell the media this, quote, "We've got to stay positive. I don't care what people say. I've said it a million times. We've got to worry about what we worry about. We've got to go out and play." And he also went on to say this, And he addressed the topic of social media. And he addressed how a lot of his teammates, they instantly get on their phones after a game and start to read all of the comments from the public, bashing the team, criticizing whoever that player is on the team. And they read into it, and it demoralizes his teammates' confidence to a certain standpoint. And in the article, I thought it was cool how Anthony highlighted at one moment Miguel Cabrera actually held up his cell phone and said, quote, "This is dangerous." And, you know, Miguel is trying to send this message to his teammates, scrolling through Twitter and reading, you know, those comments about the Tigers' uninspired play in recent days does nothing to help the team. Simple as that. And, you know, Miggy goes on to say, quote, "You play for this. You've got a chance to make the playoffs. I hope we can do it, and hopefully we can finish strong. This is fun." And he's trying to just liven the mood a little bit, because right now it's a mood in that clubhouse that is filled with immense pressure and at times just negativeness left and right. And but you get it to a certain standpoint. When you go out there and you've had all of the ups and downs that the Tigers have had this year, more downs than ups this year, it can do a lot to demoralize your confidence, especially when you are trying to compete for a playoff spot. So how do you change that? With the leaders of the team have to be leaders. And Miguel Cabrera is certainly a leader of this squad. The best hitter of our generation. Simple as that. And he is a vet on this Detroit Tigers team. Miggy knows that he has a responsibility to pick his teammates up in this moment, because he knows that if his teammates don't have confidence, there is really no shot. They have no shot at all of at least getting a wild card berth to compete in this year's MLB playoffs next month. So it's at a point of urgency right now. And to put a few things in perspective here, the Tigers, you know, they had a triple last night. How about that? The Tigers hadn't hit a triple since August 6th under until I should say Ian Kinsler and Cameron Maben hit back-to-back RBI three bangers in the fourth, and Kinsler's line drive to right center field was easily cleared, really easily cleared, Byron Buxton's diving attempt and rolling to the wall to score Andrew Romine. But when you look at what happened last night, I mean, the run support was absolutely fantastic. I mean, the bats just, they were hot to start the game. But if you have an effort like you had from Anibal Sanchez, if you have an effort like that, it's hard to win ball games. The Tigers were very fortunate to pull that out. And the fact that they're struggling to win games against a team like the Minnesota Twins, I don't know how anybody out there in their right mind can say confidently that the Detroit Tigers are going to make the MLB playoffs. I just don't see it, because there is nothing that you can harp on to say this is the reason why. Disagree? Put me in place. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Before we hit our first break, I want to invite our engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance, to the show. Isaac, how you doing?
Doing well, and yeah, I think Jaren Jackson is a huge get for Michigan State. I always find it funny whenever former NBA players or athletes send their kids to college athletics as well, because these kids have two advantages. For one, they've got the physical attributes to be naturally good at the game. They also have the best training since a young age. They've got the mind for the game. They've got that athletic breed that you can't always teach. And Jaren Jackson certainly seems to have that. When you look at his dad in the NBA, he was a 6'4 guard, a veteran swingman who would travel around, a real journeyman in the NBA. And when you look at Jaren Jackson, he's 6'10, 220, but he's got the skill set of a much smaller player. When you see him play, he has a lot of drive and kicks, a few floaters in his arsenal, almost a lot like an Antoine Jameson, if you remember him back in the day. So, Jaren Jackson, I'm excited to see what he brings to this team. But I think the other aspect of this is not only is Tom Izzo gaining esteem in the eyes of young basketball players, but I think Tom Izzo has also become more accepting, and he's willing to bring in freshmen who might want to go 1-and-done, 2-and-done. And this is a move that Tom Izzo really rejected and refused for as long as possible.
I don't know if I agree with that, Isaac, because I think that Tom Izzo is a man who, I mean, heck, I mean, this is a guy who went after Jabari Parker. I mean, he goes.
Oh, I know. That's when I'd say the trend started.
He's went after big-time recruits, because realistically, Isaac, it's hard to compete in college basketball, knowing that other schools like there, i.e. Kentucky, are out there getting these one-and-done guys who are uber talented coming straight out of high school.
I agree.
It's hard to realistically compete against programs like that if you don't try and go after the same guys.
Well, that's why I think Tom Izzo's adopted the trend instead of bucking it. But I'd say it started with Jabari Parker. I'd say that was the first name. I wouldn't say it's Miles Bridges. I'd say it's Jabari Parker.
Look at Deontay Davis. I want to make this point. Izzo has gone after countless big-time recruits, five-star recruits out there.
Who before Jabari?
They have just chosen not to go to Michigan State. They've been wooed by programs like Duke and Kentucky. Izzo has gone after him, though. He has gone after him.
But who Jabari?
The only trend I could say that's just changing right now is Izzo is starting to win that battle to a degree.
But why is he starting to win it now? Nothing's changed in terms of the prestige of this program. They haven't won a championship since 2000.
Right.
The last one-and-done player before Deontay Davis was Zach Randolph. That was over 10 years ago.
I hear you. But it only takes one to commit to the program for others to start to buy in. When you get a guy like Miles Bridges to say, okay, I want to come to your program. When you get a guy like, even though he didn't come, and Josh Jackson, who's considering it, I mean, that does a lot. And then also, I mean, Tom Izzo, again, now it doesn't take much to woo these young kids. When they see Tom Izzo is now a Hall of Famer, that does a lot in the back of these kids' mind.
Well, but Caleb Swanigan, Deontay Davis, of course, Swanigan didn't come, but those guys committed before Tom Izzo was a Hall of Famer, before Miles Bridges came. I'm saying this trend, I think it started in the days of Jabari Parker, but I think Tom Izzo's continued it because, like you said, you've got to be realistic, you've got to be pragmatic, you've got to recognize that nowadays, it's tough to win if you're not attracting the one-and-dones.
Exactly. Especially when you look at other programs out there that are getting those one-and-dones and having immense success in doing so. Tom knows that if Now, if he wants to compete for a national championship, and again, Tom wants that second ring. You know, he's constantly said that. He's not resting on any laurels here. He's trying to live up to that Hall of Fame even more so than ever now that he's finally in the Hall of Fame. He knows that if he wants to win one, he's got to go out there and get the creme de la creme. And if they happen to go one and done, they happen to go one and done.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, though. The one and done, too, it's important for people to note. It's still a relatively recent trend because ever since the NBA set the high school to college requirement for players so that they couldn't jump straight from high school to the NBA, that's when you started seeing it. It
right.
wasn't immediate because before that, if you went to college, you were committing for some long and noticeable period of time.
And that's debatable as well. I won't
you
go there
think?
With, because we've seen, even with that rule in effect, we've seen multiple players go one and done in college as well, even with the high school to NBA rule in effect. But I will say this, though, and I wish they would go back to, because I think that when you don't have that rule in effect, which is right now, I think that you have a lot of players who are really on that fence, you know? And I think that, and I've argued this as well, Isaac. I mean, I don't know why it has to be a one-way street. I don't know why if a player who decides to, you know, again, if the rule has changed, who decides to go from high school to the NBA, if it's not panning out within the first few years, why can't that player go back to college? And I know that creates another can of worms, and that goes into a whole other realm of conversation. But I don't know why it has to be a one-way street for these young athletes. Because, hey, they're young, they're going to make mistakes, things are going to happen. But why can't they go back and get their education and also see if they can hone their basketball skills at the collegiate level? I think that's healthy for basketball all around, if you ask me. So I don't know why it has to be a one-way street. And it will alleviate, I think, for the most part, if you do have a problem with the one-and-dones, I don't. There are a lot of people out there that do, and they think it hurts the college basketball game. Why don't you – I think if you open that door for an athlete to say, okay, I want to make that jump from high school to the pros because the NBA, I see my future there, I think it will alleviate those – one and dones that are quote unquote corrupting the college game. I think it will. Not foolproof 100%, but to a certain extent, I think it will.
And I don't have a problem with the one and done system. If I was
a
high school athlete going to college and trying to make my money quick, yeah, I'd go one and done myself. I think what I was saying originally is just Tom Izzo, I don't think he was as quick to adopt the trend as some other coaches. John Calipari, you saw him get Derrick Rose back in his Memphis days. Coach K has been going after one-and-dones for pretty much his entire tenure, ever since it's been worth it for him and Duke as a program. Tom Izzo, like I said, Zach Randolph was the last one-and-done before Deontay Davis. He likes recruiting the Draymond Greens, the Denzel Valentines, the talent that he saw that was uncovered by other coaches. I think that's what makes him such a special coach, and that's why I think makes this team so dangerous now that they do have the talent of one-and-done, the premier players in the entire nation.
But at the same time, it's not like Tom has neglected to go after those big-time recruits. They just have chosen not to go to his program for whatever reason. Simple as that as well. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will continue to talk about the Detroit Tigers and take your calls on that. Also, I want to get to a story that really, really turned my head, folks, earlier on in this week. And I don't know what kind of trend it is, but it's a growing one, it seems, in the world of sports. That's hazing in sports. We'll play to you a snippet from an ESPN report done by Outside the Lines. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. As promised, we are giving you guys an update on the series finale between the Detroit Tigers and the Minnesota Twins. And right now, in the top of the second inning, the Tigers are down 4-0. Yeah. Second inning, folks, Kepler singled to center. Vargas scored to make it 1-0. Then Escobar singled to right, and Kepler scored, 2-0. And then Dozier singled to left. Escobar and Rosario came around to home plate to score. So 4-0, the Tigers already in an early hole. that they will try and dig themselves out of early in this game. Top of the second again, Twins 4, Tigers nothing. All right, moving on, folks. I want to bring up a story that, it's really hard for me to put into words what I thought after seeing the outside the lines ESPN report centered around an epidemic, a growing phenomenon in the world of high school and collegiate sports. And it centers around hazing in sports. Now, you know, this isn't a new topic for many out there, especially for those that have played sports before. I mean, I've seen, you know, many videos, especially when I was in high school, okay? When I was a sophomore playing on the varsity basketball team at Annapolis High in Dearborn Heights, Michigan, you know, there were, you had to earn your stripes, especially when it came to the seniors on the squad, okay? So there were times where you had to, you know, when we were on traveling to an away game, we would have to carry, you know, the duffel bags from the senior players to the bus. Just small things like that, which I don't even know if you can consider that hazing, but it is, to, I guess, if you look at just the literal definition of it, I guess it is to a degree. But it seemed as though that it's taken a bit of a sad turn in recent years. And now maybe I could be wrong. And again, that's why I yield to our listeners out there, because maybe this has been going on longer than right now is perceived to have been going on. But there's an epidemic in high school and collegiate sports where hazing is getting worse and worse, folks. I just want to play a snippet that we actually played to end yesterday's current sports that concerns a young man whose life really changed due to an hazing incident with his local football team. Take a listen.
Then came the afternoon of August 27th, 2013. Josh says he was using the urinal near the locker room when he was overpowered by two older teammates.
They just come up behind me and pin me down and then just slip off my pants. They're laughing about it. My head's down. I don't know what's happening. And they start taking off my pants. That's when I start panicking.
Josh says one teammate pinned him against the wall, face first, while the other stuck fingers in his rectum.
They're holding me down and they just stick in the finger. They're laughing while they're doing it. And then I just fall. They let me go and I just like kind of zone out, black, just fall into myself. Not knowing what to do. I don't know how long I stayed there, but I stayed there. I probably stayed there for a while, I know. And I kind of just got up, put my pants up, and just walked out to practice.
What is going through your mind at that point?
Pain.
Pain?
Pain.
It still hurts, doesn't
it? Yeah, man. It's not something you get over that easy.
Your mom said that you told her they took my manhood. That's what they did?
Yeah. I mean, you're not supposed to forcibly do that to somebody, you know what I mean?
Yeah, folks, just a troubling and moving story. Again, a special primetime edition of ESPN's investigative reporting program entitled Outside the Lines trained its spotlight on extreme hazing, particularly among high school programs. Now, according to ESPN, the program's investigative team, led by reporter John Barr, whose voice you heard in that piece, they spent 8 months investigating a trio of hazing incidents. The first case they highlighted was the one you just heard. that centers around former Oak Hills football player Josh Villegas, who claims that he was forcibly sodomized while a freshman on the Hesperia, California team. The OTL team also reported on the case of late Milton, Vermont team Jordan Prevey, who committed suicide following hazing suffered as a member of the Milton football team. Villegas, it took a lot of courage for this young man to come out, and it's not like he was hid by a silhouette and his voice was changed. I mean, he was right there on camera talking about an event, a troubling event that changed his life. Spoke publicly about his experience for the first time on the program, while Prevey's father and stepmother reflected on the circumstances, and his mother as well, reflected on the circumstances that led to Jordan Prevey's untimely death. And, you know, you look at the statistics of this, of just this conversation, period, when it comes to hazing in sports. It's a troubling trend plaguing school athletic programs across the country, one that I really had no idea about. Hazing incidents involving sodomy. OTL actually found more than 40 such incidents since 2011, including 7 so far this year in 2016. The majority of these type of incidents, likely, they really never get reported, folks. And no state or federal agency tracks them. A code of silence often prevents witnesses and victims from speaking out. And again, the story of a few victims were told in that OTL report. Now, when looking at what really stood out to me, though, even more so than the incidents themselves, was that in these three cases, school administrators often minimized the events or were really ill-equipped to investigate what had actually happened. The results were long-lasting and traumatic. And in the case of Peavy, it led to Peavy taking a shotgun and putting it in his mouth. And I couldn't believe it, folks. And if you look at it, if you go to ESPN's OTL homepage, they actually track those 40 incidences, what high school they occurred at, and what took place, the aftermath of. I mean, really well done, wall to wall reporting. I want to open our phone lines. If you've ever heard of hazing of this nature taking place in high school sports or beyond, I mean, please enlighten me, because this is a story that took myself as well as many, I'm sure, of the ESPN viewers by total surprise. Isaac, as I stated, I went to Annapolis High School in Dearborn Heights, Michigan. I played basketball 4 years there. I was on the varsity basketball team my sophomore year, and that's a time in my life that I truly cherish, because, you know, I'm a big basketball nut. I grew up playing the game. I had dreams of possibly going to the NBA. You see how that panned out, right? But anyway, you know, just talking about the overall culture of being a part of a team in high school. Again, I mentioned how at times when I was a sophomore, I used to have to carry the duffel bags of, you know, some of the seniors to the bus. I mean, they would make us do that as a kind of a rite of passage, you know? And there were little incidents like that. I mean, sometimes we'll be in the locker room, and you know how guys are in the locker room, and in high school especially. I mean, you know, guys would wrestle a little bit, and they would pick on each other a little bit. They would talk trash. That's just the nature of a locker room in high school sports. And when I heard about this going on, though, I mean, sodomy taking place in high school locker rooms across the nation, I turned my head and said, is this something new? Am I missing something here? Because we didn't even think about doing something like that when I was in high school. Have you ever heard of anything like this? I should pose the question open-ended like
Never
that.
Never even heard of it. I've heard rumors maybe from a distant age, and that's about it. But not even to that extent. It would more be something, I wouldn't even know how to put it, but it would more just be, I don't know, some joke played on a teammate in a shower. I don't know what that would be, but I hadn't even heard of that. That's more rumors you hear about, like, from your parents or from coach is like, if I hear of any of this going on, whoever is kicked off the team. Fortunately, I think this is a lost generation. I think it's happening less and less over time, in that in the older generation, there used to be fistfights on teams. There used to be all sorts of incidents that went unreported because people didn't have the access to media that they do right now.
Right.
My dad, for example, grew up getting into fights all the time. He'd been in so many. Me? I've barely been in one outside my brother. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just how it goes right now. It's an easier generation to get by it. But it's scary that these sort of incidents still happen. I have never heard a firsthand account or secondhand account of any experience like this, but it's scary. I think the only way we can resolve it, too, is reports like this, the spreading of the message, because anti-bullying campaigns, in my mind, have become more and more prevalent and more effective as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the way to cut out incidents like this. My personal experience of any sort of hazing, you get name calling, you get to carry the duffel bags, and that's it. I mean, it's not always fun. You hate the seniors. At the same time, once you're a senior, you still say, oh, those darn freshmen are taking up our hallway space. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same dynamic. I'm not sure if that changes, but hazing, it hasn't been anything like that for me.
There are varying degrees of it, without a doubt. And, you know, when I'm just talking about hazing in general, I mean, you see it happen in small forms when it comes to athletic teams. You see it happen with actually in small and large and troubling forms when it comes to even bands across America. If anyone has never seen the Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel report on bands at historically black colleges, HBCUs, and there was an incident where a kid was actually killed during one incident where they called it oh my gosh, crossing bus in the number of the bus, I forget what, like bus 79 or something like that. And what they do is it happens at night, and the kid from the band team, or, you know, a freshman trying to make, you know, the drum corps, he gets on this bus, the lights are completely out on the bus, it happens like at midnight, and he has to walk from the front of the bus to the back of the bus. As he walks in the middle aisle, there are members of the band team on both sides hitting the individual with instruments and sticks and all that kind of stuff. And one band member who went through this crossing bus number, blah, 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 after he got to the end of the bus, I mean, he was so beaten up that he got off the bus, passed out. They didn't think it was serious. They let too much time go by before they called 911. They called 911. He was dead. And this story went viral. It was everywhere. So there are hazing incidents that happen small and large. And also, I can even talk about fraternities and sororities. That's another whole realm I could go to. You know, and I'm pretty sure hazing is happening right now on this campus right now as kids are back on campus trying to join a certain frat or sorority. I say that to say this, though. There's a fine line. There is a fine line. And anytime you talk about sodomy taking place, I mean, that has gone over the line like 50 yards, dude. I don't know. Again, I think we are talking about a completely lost generation that, when it comes to morals, really have few. Mm-hmm. And it just surprised me that kids have gone this far. And it is a form of bullying. It really is. It's a form of power. It's a form of just flexing your muscle and making yourself feel better by dehumanizing someone that you view as lesser than you, which is absolutely, it's crazy. And that goes into a whole another psychological realm that I won't even get into right now. But you know the next question I pose out here is who's responsible for this, I should say, when it comes down to it. Who's responsible for making sure this does not occur in schools across our nation? And it falls on the coaching staff. It falls on the adults at the end of the day. The coaching staff, the administrators at the school, there were multiple. What really got under my skin when watching this report. Now, Isaac, did you check out this report?
Yeah, I did. I saw it on your Facebook page, the link to it, I think, and I watched that.
There was one part where a kid had told told his head coach what was going on. Like, coach, you know, this is taking place in the locker rooms. And the coach did nothing about it. And then, of course, he was interviewed and he was asked, hey, you know, did any player come to you and let you know about what was taking place in these locker rooms? And the coach, of course, denied it. But come on, man. I mean, we're not stupid here. And then there was an incident where the principal knew about it, but she had a, well, those kids have graduated now. They're no longer a part of our school. They're not students anymore. She had an attitude like, okay, it's not our problem anymore. Yeah. To the extent that she didn't even inform the family of Peavy, who had killed himself. You know what I mean? Due to what looks to have happened is he was so traumatized from that one event that he decided to just take his life. Simple as that. And I just don't understand how adults can be so, for lack of a better word, just so stupid sometimes. Because it just blew my mind when watching that report, Isaac.
It's not entirely stupidity either. What it is the deflection of blame. They think that they'll get in more trouble if they report the incident in the first place instead of brushing it under the rug. Of course, once this comes out to the public, then they're in a huge amount of trouble, as they should be. The thing is, you can't be everywhere at once, but it's your job to instill the morals and the principles of a program, of a school, of a facility into these kids so that this is not tolerated. And if it happens, which sometimes it will, unfortunately, in 50 years, we'll still hear about a case like this, no matter how good the programs are to inform people that this is unacceptable. We'll just hear of an awry case, a stupid kid who takes this with too much flippancy. But at the same time, it's their job to make sure that once it comes, you come down with a hard arm, with
exactly.
a strong hand.
And I understand.
And these adults didn't.
And I understand it's impossible to be with these kids 24/7. You don't know. You just can't be. You know, when they go out and hang out after school, you don't know where they're going. Things happen. But at the same time, if you are informed of something like this and you do nothing about it, you're just as guilty. 3 minutes left. It is Thursday, and each and every Thursday, we love to hop into our current sports time machine and take a look at what happened on this particular date in sports history. We dub it Throwback Thursday.
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman back over his step. Into the spot for Brown. Shoots. Yes. And there it goes. You never know when to expect it. Darren McCarty said before.
All right, folks. So what exactly took place on this particular date in sports history? I'll be quick, seeing as though we have less than 2 minutes left here in the show. All right, it is September 15th, and on this day in sports, back in 1870, 11th British Open, Tom Morris Jr. shoots a 149 at Prestwick Golf Club. Pretty impressive there. I wish I shot that yesterday, I tell you that. In 1899, way back, the 5th U.S. Golf Open, Willie Smith, love that name, shoots a 315 at Baltimore CCMD. In 1912, Red Sox pitcher Joe Wood ties then record of 16 straight wins. In 1922, catcher Butch Henlein is first NLer to hit three homers in a game since 1897. And in 1923, Bill Tilden wins the U.S. Lawn Tennis Open. I got a few weddings in sports that I want to take into account as well. Professional boxer George Foreman wed Sharon Goodson on this day. And also, hey, big shout out to the Magic Man. On this day back in 1991, NBA basketball star and former Michigan State hoop great Magic Johnson marries Cookie Kelly. Gotta love that. Happy anniversary, Magic. We are out of time, folks. We'll be back at it same time, same place on tomorrow's Current Sports. We will invite Joanne Gertzner and Jeffrey S. Kucher as they will join the show to talk about a new book centered on concussions in sports entitled Back in the Game, Why Concussion Doesn't Have to End Your Athletic Career. We'll see you tomorrow, folks. Thanks so much for tuning in to this edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Be easy, people.